passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hot Sheet is here. Scotty Braun, Carlos Collazo, and Peter Flaherty right off the jump. Great to have you all on here. And I want to encourage everyone to send in some questions and comments because one of the top prospects in the sport, James Wood, will be joining us soon on this very show. Carlos, are you excited?
Oh, very. This is going to be phenomenal. He's been outrageous. I feel like you could make a case that he's one of the very best prospects in baseball. We already have him pretty juiced, but he has done nothing to deter us off that ranking at this point.
Tell the world, where do you have him currently ranked?
We've got him in the top 10 right now with graduations. I think he's around 8. One of the big debates we had in the offseason was like, do you prefer Dylan Cruz or do you prefer James Wood? I think depending on your philosophy and your taste in prospects, you can make a compelling case either way. But the fact that he's hitting the ball as hard as he does and moving the way he does and still playing center field, it's been pretty phenomenal to see. And I don't even think he's really turned it on all the way just yet. So you could put him as high as you wanted.
Yeah, he's saving his best for the show, which hopefully will be soon. We'll get to that with him. And he is ranked number 8 at the very moment on the current Baseball America rankings. Please subscribe to BA if you get a chance. And let's get right into our first move. Meep, meep. Boom. All right, so the mock draft version 2.0 is out for this year's draft. And Peter, I'll let you kick things off with us to get a word in and also give us a global view of what this draft is going to look like, because there are some Debbie Downers about the talent in this draft. Are you on that list?
Yeah, it's an interesting draft for sure. Like Carlos and I talk about it weekly on the podcast and even off air, but there's becoming a clear tier of about 8 to 10 or so guys and then a little bit of a break. And while I think that those names are the top guys right now, there is value to be found, as always, after that in the teens and later in the first round, but also in the middle and later rounds. You know, that's where you can find a lot of value guys. So I think that while it's not as deep as some other years, it might be a little bit deeper than people are currently giving it credit for. But like on the surface, it's 8 to 10 or so guys, and then, you know, we could go haywire pretty quick.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing that really stands out and maybe complicates this discussion, or maybe it doesn't complicate it, but 2023 was an exceptional draft class. And so I think even if you had a solid or above average class following that, it probably wouldn't look great in comparison. But I think one of the areas of this draft class specifically that teams have maybe criticized and wondered about is the high school demographic. We don't have the same amount of high school hitters, especially up in the first round that we previously have. I think it's going to be pretty college heavy. You look at the top 8 players on our board now, it's all college players. I think beyond that, it has a chance to be pretty college heavy in the first round. There is a lot of really exciting talent on the high school pitching side, kind of late day one, in that 2 to 5 round range. But that's also a demographic that is pretty costly to sign out of college. Some teams don't really want to invest a ton in that demographic. So how teams navigate round 2, rounds 3, as we move on, I think will be really fascinating this year.
Hey, Peter, you want to point out a player or two that stand out in that top 8 that we're going over?
Yeah, I think there are a couple obvious ones. For me, it's my personal 1-1 guy, Travis Bazzana from Oregon State. And then Georgia outfielder, third baseman, almost becoming a utility man in college this year, Charlie Condon. Condon obviously is lighting the world on fire. It's a really tantalizing hit-power combo. It's plus hit with now double plus power. And the thing that I always am impressed with Condon is for someone of his size, he's 6'5", 6'6", it's a pretty unique, compact, and explosive operation in the box. Like the levers don't really get out of sync. And he's, you know, he's been outstanding. And then with Bazzana, he's been a longtime favorite of mine, as explosive as it gets in the box, elite level bat speed, pro approach, and the barrel awareness is off the charts. So those are my two personal favorites at the top of the class.
Yeah, I think if Peter had the keys to the 1-1 pick, Bazzano would be the clear mock draft choice for him. I think with Cleveland at the top, they're probably going to wait a little bit longer before they make a decision. I know all of these names we're talking about are in the discussion. Bazzano certainly fits their MO more than a guy like Jack Caglione, who I think is maybe the most famous player in this class at this point, maybe even more famous than Charlie Condon, given the two-way status. But there are really a lot of players that still have a chance for 1-1 at this stage. All the eight names that we're listing here, I think, have a case as we get to the end of the college baseball's regular season. The fact that guys like Nick Kurtz and J.J. Weatherholt might be at the 7 and 8 spots at this point, and that's where I had him in this mock, I think just speaks to the quality of this group as a tier, because those guys have a case as the best pure hitters in the class, and you're talking about them at 7 and 8. That's pretty good if you're picking there. I think the injuries they've faced and maybe the positional limitations that they have, specifically with Kurtz, could put them down there. But guys like Braden Montgomery, Chase Burns, and Hagen Smith on the pitching side, who we haven't talked about, they've all been really good. So if you're picking top 10 this year, you're probably excited. If you're picking after that, there are a lot of question marks still.
Carlos, big picture question. When you're putting this together, do you think about any teams that like to target, you know, certain positions or certain players from certain places? Does that go into what you're doing here? I mean, I don't think anybody anticipated the year, what was it, like 3 or 4 years ago when the Angels picked like 20 pitchers in their first 20 picks or something like that. Exactly. But, you know, I think fans are often curious if they have, say, a franchise player catcher. Does a team look for a player like that in the top 10, or do they maybe say, hey, anything but catcher, because we feel like we're really good here, or even, you know, we have two or three guys in the system too that we already like, so let's try and even cheat our way over to a different position?
Yeah, I think it probably will vary from team to team on how much they really value that positional scarcity, or the opposite. You know, it's fascinating, the Giants had Joey Bart as their number 2 overall pick, and then a few years later, even the next year after, they took Patrick Bailey, and they're really are pretty safe if you're just taking the best talent available. I think more teams will look towards positional scarcity or areas they need to address in their organization beyond day one. After you get outside of rounds 1 and 2, it's a little bit easier maybe to line up some positional needs further down the draft. There are not going to be a ton of teams who say, oh, we really could use a pitcher in the org, but the top 5 players on our board right now in the first round, they're all hitters, so we're going to pass them up. That probably isn't too common. It's nice when that aligns with you, where let's say if you're the Red Sox and you really want to get some pitching and you have Trey Savage on the board, great, you might take him. In this mock draft, we don't have him off the board and there's not an obvious pitcher to go to. So in that situation, I think it's probably better just to take whoever you think is the best hitter on the board. It makes it tricky from a mock perspective that you can't as easily align positional needs or team needs. But I think that's probably the strategy that most teams are following in the first round.
What do you think, Peter?
I think Carlos hit on it perfectly. I think when you're in that day one conversation, especially in the first round, they're not going to be drafting on positional needs. I'm a believer myself, and in especially in that range, and taking the best player available. And I'm extremely with Carlos in the fact that like day two and beyond, that's when you kind of get into the nitty gritty a little bit.
Okay. And then let's get to the college edition of Hot Sheet. Can we point out a player that stood out this week? Peter, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, I think Brody Brecht is a perfect place to start. He shoved for Iowa. I think it was 7 2/3 scoreless innings. He allowed just one hit, racked up 12 or 13 strikeouts, and then his 30-plus whiffs were an ungodly number. And he has long been kind of the highest ceiling arm potentially in this year's class. The stuff is electric. The fastball has obviously long been known as a premium pitch. It's been up to 102, and he actually relies heavily and even pitches off of that hellacious power slider. And when it's all going for him, he looks like the best pitcher in the country. The key for him is just consistency in throwing strikes and throwing quality strikes. And if he can do that, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I think Brody Brecht is maybe one of the, I don't know if polarizing is the right word, but like the upside versus the risk that he provides for teams is significant, because I think you can make a case that he's a top 3 pure talent in terms of just the arm talent. The fastball that he's throwing is almost unhittable if he can put it over the strike zone. And that really has been the question with him. We wondered if with a full offseason, not focused on baseball training for baseball, he would be able to take a step forward in that department. it didn't look like he had initially, but in conference play, he actually has gotten the walk rate down to about 12%, which doesn't sound great and is probably not great typically for a college first rounder, but it is better than what he's done historically. So maybe there are some signs that he's taking steps forward. There are some teams who don't view him as a first rounder at all. There are some teams that are just dreaming on his upside and have confidence in their player development groups that they would maybe take him in the middle of the first round. So how he finishes will be crucial. And I think there's a pretty wide range of outcomes for him on draft day.
Hey, Carlos, I'll go kind of circling back to where we started here with the draft talk. How do you size up the draft in general compared to, you know, some previous drafts? I know like last year, for example, obviously stood out as really strong, especially very top heavy. I mean, I don't know if you want to do grading or just some history comps, but where does this one stack up?
Absolutely. One of the cool things that we've been able to do the last few years is poll scouting directors actually on how they grade draft classes. Now, this might be a little bit dated because we do it in the preseason, but I don't think it's changed too much. But this is overall, I would say it's the weakest draft class we've had in the last 4 years. I think the area of strength you have in this draft class is the college hitting demographic specifically. Scouting directors graded that as above average. Like I mentioned previously, the high school class as a whole is probably the weak point. That was given below average grades both for high school pitchers and high school hitters. You don't have two players like Max Clark and Walker Jenkins at the top. You don't have that really deep shortstop pool. You don't have a pitcher like Noble Meyer, who's like very clearly a no doubt first round right-handed pitcher that you can feel confident in. So that's maybe a weakness. I think there was some excitement about the pitching in this class, although even entering the year, there are question marks about the amount of strikes that that group threw. I do think the top end of this class has been better than scouts expected. So again, if you're picking up there, you're probably encouraged. You've got a lot of profiles to pick from. Another area where this class just doesn't have a lot of depth compared to previous years or typical years is just up the middle profiles. Previously, we had a lot of shortstops, Tommy Troy, Matt Shaw, Braden Taylor, all those guys going in the middle of last year's first round. There are maybe a handful of shortstops that will go in the first round this year, both on the college and high school side. So you're looking at a lot more corner profiles, and teams just really want to get a player who they feel confident in hitting and can stick at an up the middle position. And this year you just have fewer of those, I think, as you get further down the board.
Yeah, we'll do a lot more of this on Hot Sheet. Obviously, you can listen to Carlos and Peter talk about this on their pod as well. Make sure you subscribe to the Baseball America podcast page. Peter, great to have you on, man. We'll see you soon, okay?
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thank you. Carlos will stay, and we will see if James Wood is good to go.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Nationals prospect joining us on Hot Sheet. James, can you hear us right now?
Yeah.
Hey, great to have you on. We appreciate the time. How is life so far this season?
What was that? Sorry.
How's the season going for you so far?
Oh, I mean, it's been good. I mean, just kind of getting comfortable with things out here, starting to warm up a little bit. But, yeah, no, it's been going good, though. Just having a lot of fun out here, just trying to get better.
James, can you maybe take us through some of the off-season prep you were doing this year? What were the big focuses or maybe key goals for you this off-season as you continue on with your career?
Yeah, no, it was kind of just – I learned a lot this off-season. I feel like I had a good winter. I mean, I was just able to ask a lot of questions, kind of learn my own swing a lot better, kind of figure out what I need to work on and kind of just – find a couple of those things up and sort of, I mean, I would say the main thing was kind of just hitting wise, just staying on my backside and just controlling my swing and controlling my direction. So,
yeah, and I actually wanted to ask you about that. The strikeout rate is pretty significantly down this year. I mean, you're a big guy, so I feel like maybe it's trickier for you compared to other hitters just to control the zone. But that jumped out to me initially, just how much you've cut the strikeout rate already. The walk rate is up. Are you kind of changing your approach at the plate? Is it just a matter of feeling good and locked in? Are there certain pitches you're laying off of that previously you were swinging at? Talk me through that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of a mix of both. I think kind of just being able to trust my swing a little bit more. And then, like you said, just being a little bit more consistent with my approach. I think it's just helped me be able to make quicker adjustments and kind of just battle through a couple more at-bats.
James, who did you make friends with in spring training this year?
I think a lot of those guys. I think that was my first big league camp, so it was kind of a lot of new faces, players and coaches, a lot of people who I'd kind of known of, but never really got the chance to really know as a person. But yeah, no, it was a lot of guys that I was able to learn from and just ask a lot of questions with. I don't even know if I can name a name, but it was a lot of guys that I learned from in spring that helped me.
Did anyone say something to you, you know, when obviously you found out that you were going to spend a little bit more time in the minor leagues? Like, was there any notable line that you can think of where they're like, we're going to see you soon?
Oh, yeah, I definitely heard that a couple times, but you know, when they told me I was going down, I didn't really try and like dwell on it too much. I was kind of kept the same focusing on my own business and sort of trying to just handle things down here. And I'll get the call when I'm ready. And when I get the call, I know I'll be ready. So.
Hey, Dylan Cruz was in Major League Spring Training with you. I mean, you two get talked about together a lot, part of the future of the Washington Nationals. Can I get a scouting report for you on Dylan Cruz? You don't have to give me any weaknesses. Just give me all the strengths. How would you size up Dylan Cruz as a ball player?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's got strengths everywhere on the field. I feel like he's a 5-tool player, so I feel like that's the easiest report I could give you.
What's the best tool you think that he's got?
I don't know. I would probably say the hit tool, but I think the power is definitely there too. I mean, he hit some balls this spring that were pretty impressive, especially going the other way. So,
how about for you, James? What would you say is the tool that you're most either proud of or you think you can impact the game? Because I think what really stands out is just the power speed combo from a guy your size. The fact that you're playing center field. I remember in high school, people were like, oh, he's playing center field now and he's really good, but wonder if he'll move off the position. You're still doing it. I guess what is the part of your game you take the most pride in?
I think kind of just being well-rounded in everything. I think it's kind of like you said, just being able to impact the game in every way. I think because obviously a lot of times as hitters, we want to focus on the bat the most, but a lot of times that's not there. So I think it's important being able to help your team win, whether if you're not hitting it with your defense or if you work a walk, being able to steal a base or two and getting into scoring position.
Hey, James, we have a fan question from DC Mike. Mike said, how do you feel about playing for your hometown team, the Nats? So you can even kind of take me back a little bit, and I know you've talked about this, but for our show, and when you find out you get traded, okay, but you're getting traded to the Nationals, were you like, okay?
No, it was definitely, it was kind of a lot going on when I got traded. kind of like you said, I mean, it's not only that I got traded, but I was getting traded back home. So, I mean, it was pretty surreal. I mean, my family's been able to come out to a lot more games, even while I'm not even in the minor leagues. All the affiliates are pretty close to home. So, yeah, I mean, it's nice. I think it was a lot at first, but I think we're all happy. I think once I got settled in and everything, got to know all the people, I mean, the organization's been great. And it's like you said, it's right in my backyard, so it's nice.
James, a couple more questions about, you know, you growing up and playing the game. When did you fall in love with the game?
I don't know. I feel like I fell in love really early. I feel like I always played basketball. I mean, I played a little bit of football, but I feel like I knew, and I feel like my family knew that, like, baseball was always my favorite sport. So I feel like it happened, like, super early. I probably barely even remember it, to be honest.
Was it tough to give up hoops? Because you had hoops players in your family too, right?
No, not really. I mean, I think I stopped playing at a good time, and I think that was kind of right when I was able to really focus on baseball. And my family was really supportive. I mean, my dad played basketball, and both of my sisters played, my uncle played, all that. So I just think my parents, they just wanted me to be happy, and as long as I was working hard and being positive, I think they're going to support me with whatever I did.
Which player did you watch, and do you think it's cool that there are more, like, large players entering the show these days that are capable of flying around the outfield? Is that cool inspiration?
Yeah, no, definitely. But I would say, I don't know. I watch Yordan a lot. I watch Barry Bonds a lot. Yeah, and then even, like, for outfield, like, I watched some guys, some, like, the best outfielders there, like Kiermaier, or just honestly whatever. I'm just trying to grab, if I can, just grab some information from everybody if that's possible.
What about Judge?
I watch a little bit, but, I mean, I feel like a lot of times people expect me to watch a lot of Judge. That's the comp I get a lot. I mean, we're very similar in size, but I feel like our swings work a lot different. So I probably don't watch as much Judge as a lot of people would think. But I mean,
true.
Whose swing do you?
One of my favorite players still, though.
Whose swing do you emulate, or do you think is closest to yours in the league?
That's a good question. I don't really try and emulate anybody. I like to think that me and Yordan got similar swings. I get O'Neill Cruz a lot. I just think because our builds are very similar too, left-handed hitters. But I'll probably say those two.
I like that. Well, thanks for spending some time with us, James. We appreciate it. Keep crushing it in the minors, all right?
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, James Wood, prospect in the Washington Nationals system. Can't wait to see him up in the show very soon. He's a Baseball America top 10, and he has a ton of potential. I like the answer there at the tail, and that's why I was, you know, kind of going back and forth for a moment, Carlos, because he does get the Aaron Judge comp, and it's not the swing like he mentioned, which shows you. I mean, he's like, I'm looking at dudes and seeing what their swings look like. I'm looking at the best defenders in baseball, and Judge is really good, but he's like, I'm going to Kevin Kiermaier. Oh, no, one of the best defenders we've had, you know, in the past 10, 15, 20 years in our sport, which is really cool. I think people will, again, be surprised to see a player of that size, a player who has a similar size to Aaron Judge, roam the outfield, play it at an above average level, and have the speed, and, you know, not have necessarily tons of holes in his swing, despite being a really big dude.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. I liked the answer where he was really – not at all concerned about giving up basketball, because we lose so many really talented baseball players to other sports. And the fact that he was just like, nope, it's baseball for me. I'm ready to go. That's phenomenal. I hope we can get more just athletes like James Wood. I mean, there are not a lot of athletes like James Wood. He is such an outlier in so many ways. But the fact that he was so convicted and set on baseball from a young age is pretty awesome, especially considering, you know, the background and some of his family members doing a lot on the basketball court.
Yeah, I love that. And then lastly, just to wrap up our conversation here about James Wood, what did you think about, you know, the fact that he's there and Dylan Cruz is there around the same time? They both could get called up at a similar time. I would say probably Wood first, if I had to guess. At this moment, you know, it was cool for both of them to be in camp and, you know, are going to be in a similar spot, I think, very soon.
Yeah, I think I would agree. Just the fact that James Wood has had a little bit more time in the minor leagues. Dylan Cruz isn't exactly forcing the issue. He's not like lighting the world on fire. I think he's doing fine. But I also wonder, like, the Nationals really aren't in a position where the Rangers were, where they could really just be aggressive and push their prospects because they're contending now. But thinking about a potential outfield with both of those playing in some capacity. I'm really curious to see how the outfield alignment is going to look. The fact that James Wood has played most of his time in center field, I mean, I would expect him to move to a corner. I think Dylan Cruz fits in center field more just because he's more of that prototypical center fielder. But the fact that you've got two guys who can basically play like center fielders wherever you're putting them with the sort of power they both bring is really exciting for Nationals fans. And I would imagine we're going to see them both pretty soon in DC.
Yes, absolutely. Nats fans are getting excited. Also, we had a chat on Foul Territory yesterday with Kevin Franzen. And if you want to feel hyped as a Nats fan, just go click that later on and find that. I mean, he is talking up this Nats team. They've had a few pitching prospects that are looking pretty good right now, which, you know, obviously most of the focus has been on the two players that we're talking about. Let's bring in Jeff Pontus right now to join us from Baseball America. Jeff, let's finish strong here. How you doing?
What's going on, Scott? What's up, Carlos? How are you?
I am good. Hey, I'm Jeff. Good. And I'd like to jump right into our prospect profile.
Let's do it.
The name is Heston Kjerstad, and we saw him just for a little taste last year, Jeff. But now he might be up for good with the Baltimore Orioles. So what do you think he can bring to the table for a team that really is so loaded that we are going to talk about almost every show this year?
Yeah, it feels like we still have three or four more prospects in the tank that could potentially get called up for the Orioles this season that we could be doing some profiles on like this. And, you know, while it's not at the same height of, you know, Jackson Holliday, he has already gotten his first taste of the majors. It's huge power, very outlier power plus contact skills just in terms of his ability to hit the ball as hard as he does, make contact as consistently as Kjerstad does. Little bit of an aggressive approach. He's not a guy that's going to run super high walk rates, but he is a little versatile defensively. Not a great defender, but can play an outfield corner, can play some first base, and could fit into sort of, I would say, you know, a little bit of a hybrid role of what, you know, Ryan Ahern is, or what Ryan Mountcastle can be, fill a DH spot as well. But there's 30 plus home run upside here in the bat when I think we're talking long term, and a guy that could hit 270 or so in his peak years.
Yeah, Kjerstad was definitely drafted for the offensive ability, and you can make a case that he's been the most dominant player in all of the minor leagues to this point. Already with 10 home runs is pretty impressive. But he was another Orioles pick where it was not a consensus pick on draft day. He was taken number 2 overall. I believe we had him ranked number 13, kind of expected him to go somewhere in the middle of the first round. He went quite a bit higher than that and has looked phenomenal. The career got started a little bit slower because he was dealing with some injuries. He's dealing with myocarditis that left him off the field. So he's not the youngest player in the world. He's in his age 25 season right now. But like Jeff was saying, he's a pretty complete hitter just in terms of contact and power. I've been impressed with his ability to use all fields. I think at this point he's hitting about a third of his balls the opposite way, a third of his balls at the middle, and a third to the pull side. So he's definitely going to be a guy who can hit in the middle of an order somewhere. Where is he going to fit on this Orioles team? That maybe is another question that's interesting because they have so many guys you just want to get in the lineup. But he's been pretty phenomenal so far.
What did you think of, you know, the pick by the Orioles? If you can take us back to when he was drafted, right? I see you smiling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can take you back because at the time I thought Austin Martin was the guy you have to take number 2. He ended up going number 5 to the Blue Jays. I was like, oh, this is the pick of the draft. The Orioles threw a curveball. And, you know, at this point, I think we just have to trust the Orioles with what they're doing because they've just done such an excellent job IDing the hitters they're taking. They're not afraid to draft off the board. And even Jackson Holliday, it was less of an off-the-board pick at the time because Holliday was in that consideration, but he was not the unanimous 1-1 guy in that class. But I think for Kjerstad in that draft year, what maybe separated him from some other players. That was the 2020 draft. He didn't have a full season. He did have a pretty lengthy track record of hitting for contact, hitting for power. He was Team USA Baseball's best hitter of the summer before. So I think the track record probably made the Orioles feel pretty good. And then really ever since he's been in the minors, he's been productive. It's just been a matter of staying healthy and getting on the field. And it'll be cool to see him hopefully establish himself full-time in the majors from here on out.
Yeah, it's crazy. You look at someone like Austin Martin at the time, Jeff, and that's what we did. I remember, you know, hearing it from quite a few, like, oh man, how did he slip? This could be the steal of the draft. Well, I mean, for now, Austin Martin, you know, looks like he has less upside and should be a big league player at some point, but I'm not sure, you know, if he'll even necessarily be a big league regular.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look back on that draft and I think just the amount of uncertainty that was sort of plunged into the process because of, you know, the COVID pandemic and the amount of games that were canceled, and we didn't really get to see things play out and come to fruition over the course of a full college season. I mean, if we went back and just looked at the first 4 weeks of this season, a lot has changed. You know, Carlos just did his mock draft update. We have the draft rankings update coming this week, and there's some movement around on some college players that, if we look back in the first 4 weeks of the season, it was pretty strong. So I think, you know, looking back with a 2020 lens, there's a lot of players that got taken outside of the first round that are guys that probably would have gone in the top 10 over somebody like Austin Martin. But to Kerstad's credit, you know, he was ripping it up at Arkansas. He was the hottest hitter in college baseball that season. It was just, there were some questions on the hit tool and the approach, but he's tracking ahead of a lot of guys that I think some might've ranked ahead of him coming into that draft process.
Yeah, I'll be curious too if him getting brought up, does he help really light the spark for Holiday? Jackson Holiday's been struggling. He was not struggling early in the minor leagues when they were both hitting in the same lineup. So maybe getting his former teammate there will really kick him into gear, and we'll see the hitter that we all expect that Jackson Holiday will be. So maybe the secret sauce is just putting them both in the same lineup.
Yeah, they need a trio of bronze prospects together, you know.
Yeah, well, let me double down on that. I mean, Jeff, I'll start with you. Jackson Holiday has struggled so far. He's super young. I was one of many saying, let's go, call him up. Call him up from spring training. I also am usually one of the first in line to say it's okay to get sent down if that slump extends to a certain line. There have been plenty of recent names that get called up, go back down briefly, and then get called back up again. Obviously, we just had Mike Trout on Foul Territory on Friday. He even brought it up again, kind of kicking back to those times. And he was a big deal prospect, right? He went deep, you know, into the first round, and many teams regretted that. Then he was crushing the minors, comes up, not the guy that you expected right away. So what do you think of Jackson Holiday right now? Because the swing and miss is very high. I mean, it's one thing if you're like, okay, it's 30 ABs, there's batted ball luck and all that, but he is striking out quite a bit.
Yeah, and I talked about this yesterday on the Baseball America Fantasy podcast with my co-host Dylan White. And, you know, it seems like if you watch the games, he's out of his approach. The things that made Jackson Holiday good, using the entire field, you know, staying inside the zone, rarely ever expanding, not trying to sort of crush everything to his pull side. And it seems like we've seen a lot of that in the major leagues, but there was a little bit of that in spring training. There was a little bit of that in AAA, though I know the numbers were great. He actually grades out as our top player in our RoboScout model at the AAA level still. And I know that there was some focus for him in the offseason in terms of adding power. He's talked about it. So, you know, I don't know if getting out of that approach and maybe kind of going backwards a little bit to the guy that does use the entire field, stays inside his approach, is looking to take walks, work deep in the counts. You know, perhaps that's where he sort of gets out of it and finds his rhythm and find his timing. But it's not unusual. Like you said, Mike Trout, another one that comes to mind is I remember Alex Bregman, when he first got called up, was killing the minor leagues, jumped a few different levels, really was productive, came to the majors, and it was like 1-for-35, 1-for-36. I'm kind of pulling numbers out of thin air here, but it was somewhere along the lines of what we've seen so far with Holiday.
Mm-hmm. Carlos, do you think Jackson's going to turn it around in time, or he might need, you know, a little pick me up in the minors again? Go join that hard hitting Tides team for a few weeks and then come back up.
You know, I guess I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. I do think this lineup is so good that he doesn't really need to be like the peak Jackson Holiday hitter to still provide value. He is a good defender. I think he's been quite good at second base. He's maybe not getting on base enough to actually let his legs work and do some damage on the bases. But I don't know that there's a ton of pressure for him to be like the best or the second best or even the fourth or fifth best hitter in this lineup. If they feel like maybe he is just getting beaten up so much that his confidence is lacking a little bit, maybe there's a like a mental edge there to send him back to AAA and kind of remind himself who he is and that he can make things happen. But I don't get the feeling that Jackson Holliday is going to be a guy who really starts to doubt himself after struggles like this. I mean, I'm sure he's had conversations with his dad about just the lows that you can experience in baseball. He's gone through them himself. I mean, when he was a senior in high school, his draft summer, he was really not that great. He was overswinging, like Jeff was just talking about. He was trying to pull the ball and pull the ball for damage a little bit too often with a lot of eyes on him. And then the following spring, he kind of stayed within himself and was just more of a true hitter. So maybe it's just another scenario like that where you kind of come up and you want to meet the moment and you're pressing too hard. But once he kind of gets used to things and just settles down, it'll come. So I guess I wouldn't be shocked either way, but I do think he does enough defensively that he's not going to kill you, even if he's not hitting excellently right now.
As we're doing this show live, Jackson Holliday's already at a +3 on outs above average, and he's been in the league for 5 seconds. And I also think the first few games, he still was getting the outs. It was like not fielding the ball cleanly on a few plays, right? There were like a little bit of nerves, and then now he's been super smooth out there at second base. That was one of the things that the Orioles brought up when they said they were sending him down. They're like, more reps at second base. Well, he's proven that side. So, you know, if they're true to their word, they'll give him a little more time on the offensive side of things. And you're right, it's not like they're hurting there in first place by themselves right now in the most competitive division in Major League Baseball. So that's it for your prospect profile. Maybe Heston Kjerstad will help the cause too. You bring up one of your buddies like these two mentioned. We'll see what happens. And good luck to Kjerstad getting called up to the show. All right, that's it for our show here on Hot Sheet. Carlos and Jeff, thanks for swinging by. And actually, Jeff, you want to do a quick little shout out? I know you did a prospects chat, so that's free, and that's pretty often, right, that people can get involved?
Yeah, so that's every Tuesday after the Hot Sheet comes out. We do the chat at 2 p.m., and it kind of goes until we've answered all the questions. So I'm still in there now. I think I got another 9 or 10 questions, so get the questions in. I'll try to answer them before I have Little League practice at 5:30.
There you go. Hey, like this show, subscribe to it on the podcast version too. Thanks to James Wood for joining us. We'll see you next week.